In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, April 26, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. It is the Federal News Countdown today with the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Ron Sanders of Booz Allen Hamilton. It is great to see you, as always, Ron. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And Dan Mintz of ESEM Consulting is our other expert choosing the most important stories of the week. It's good to have you on, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
And we enjoyed a conversation about hockey before we went on. And, of course, tomorrow night's Caps game is on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're not going, right, Dan?
No, I will be there next week.
So none of us will be there. And it's a good thing that there is next week to go to, because for a while it didn't look like there was going to be a last week of April, first week of May hockey game in Washington.
We dream of the cup each year.
Yes, and keep dreaming that dream. And we will dream the dream of the top stories of the week on the countdown. We start with... Ron Sanders, your third most important federal news story of the week is actually a carryover from last week on Congress's repeal of the Stock Act. And there's I heard a lot of sighs of relief all across the city as this happened for a lot of different reasons.
Right. So just a bit of background in case folks haven't been following this. Last year, Congress passed something called the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act. I love the acronym. Basically to prevent insider trading on the part of elected officials and political appointees. And literally at the 11th hour, I think this occurred, you know, late in the evening, one of those legislators said what's good for the goose is good for the gander and applied it, extended it to 30,000-plus federal employees, mostly those who are used to filing financial disclosure statements. And here's the rub. This is what got everybody upset. They would have... been forced to put those financial disclosure statements online in an accessible database, sort of the identity thieves wet dream. I mean, we'll talk about a candy store, and there are other implications, frankly, more serious than that we can get into. But Congress postponed the effective date of that a couple of times and asked the National Academy of Public Administration to take a look, step back, get away from all of the politics back and forth. I was on the NAPA panel that did it. It was chaired by David Chu, a former Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. And NAPA issued a report, and I think we set a world record because less than 2 weeks after we issued a report recommending that Congress suspend the requirement indefinitely, Congress did. And we were all amazed because most of the people on the panel are longtime Washington actors, and
I mean, they know how this stuff works.
Yeah, and the fact that you could remake sausage in such a short period of time was remarkable. But so the law has been postponed indefinitely. We think that's about the same as repeal. But as you would expect, there are two sides to this, and the good government, the government in the sunshine groups are now concerned about it.
The Sunlight Foundation is one group that my colleague Jack Moore. Quotes in this story. It's linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And actually, Sunlight Foundation is one of the groups that talked to us about this. There are others. And there was one of those groups, and I'm sorry the name escapes me, was on the Federal Drive this morning with Emily Kopp. And you can hear that interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. This is pretty much a done deal, though. I mean, even when I had the representative of Sunlight on a couple of weeks ago for this indefinite hold, she said, this isn't going to happen. There's no way that they'll be able to put this back. This will be repealed. This information won't be available. She wasn't happy about it, but kind of was giving up at that point already.
Well, and look, what the NAPA panel found were that there are arguments pro and con. You know, more sunshine, more transparency means more accountability. For federal financial filers, there's already plenty of that. We both have filed those disclosure statements in our past, and they're reviewed by agency lawyers who, frankly, know the nuances of the ethics laws. But I have to tell you, the thing that I think drove us in the direction we did on the panel were some nuances that I think a lot of people are missing. Yeah, this increases the risk of identity theft. Everybody has that risk. But there were national security and law enforcement implications that were quite serious. Three quick scenarios. One, you file your stuff online. Anybody can access it. If it shows indebtedness, this is the recruiter of spies best case.
Yep, they love those.
Look for people who are indebted. Look for people who have a job title that says they have access to classified information. Go help them,
mm-hmm.
and you got them. A classic case. It makes it so easy to do. The reverse was also problematic. A federal employee who files, and in the filing, it shows significant wealth. This is especially problematic for State Department folks and others deployed overseas, where they are told as a matter of course, don't talk about your finances online, in person. Don't do that. You'll put you and your family at risk for kidnapping and ransom, cottage industry in some countries.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is, accessible online. There are all sorts of criminals, individual and organized, that would love to get their hands on that, and it puts you at risk. And again, it contradicts the stuff they tell folks who are about to go overseas.
Yep.
The third is most problematic. We have employees, law enforcement and intelligence, who are undercover. The latter are exempted from the law, but if they're in one of those positions where they look like a normal federal employee, but they're not, and they don't file, by process of elimination, you can begin to ferret out who is and who isn't. So one of the groups that's taken exception to the repeal has said they talked to cybersecurity experts, and they said there's no additional risk. For identity theft, you could debate that point. But for those unique scenarios, they're unique to the federal government and some of the filers in the federal government, I think that's what persuaded us to make the recommendations that we did.
Ron Sanders' third most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. Congress repeals Stock Act reporting requirements for senior execs. Dan Mintz, your third most important story is from Bloomberg. And the headline is Google says government content removal requests rise 26%. What is driving these removal requests mostly, according to what you've been reading?
So, first of all, it's interesting that that the Google does transparency on transparency. That is, they report every 6 months on all the requests around the world that are made to them to remove content. So you can look this up anytime you want to. I think the broad issue that's driving it is the fact that more and more content is on the internet. So the fact that it's there means some cases people don't want it to be there. So that's one issue. The next level up is you're finding a lot of activity that are sensibilities around free speech. So you're seeing a lot of movement now around hate speech or things that offend sensibilities. One of the this was during this time period is when this YouTube video called Innocence of Muslims, which led to riots.
Supposedly.
And people... Well, right.
I don't think I've ever stopped him in his tracks before.
And, you know, I was looking at the clock, 13 minutes in, and you've dropped your first grenade.
Wow.
Yes, I was trying to decide what the supposedly applied to.
Well, just
yes,
continue.
Whether it was the innocence or
continue.
The, yeah, okay.
Continue.
Coincidentally, where people died at around the same time this video came out.
Okay.
And a lot of requests came in for that. So what you have is a lot of movement around the world that is dealing with is there speech that should be censured or limited in some fashion? So you have this broad issue of free speech versus sensitized speech. So there's a lot of that on the internet also. In a very broad sense, the issue that comes down to it is, again, this issue of information sharing, which we say we're for, and information protection. Now, we classically talk about that in terms of security, but there's also protection in terms of censorship. So what's happening is as the internet becomes more and more pervasive as the mechanism for purveying information, all these issues come out in the internet.
The part of this that I thought that jumped out at me that I would have never expected, the story says the increase was driven in part by Brazil. If you would have said choose a country that's driving this, they would have been about 200th on my list. This says Brazil ranked number one during the period amid municipal elections in the country. Many requests were related to alleged violations of Brazilian electoral rules that forbid defamation and commentary that offends candidates, Google said.
So,
can you imagine a law like that in the United States?
Yeah.
I mean, there would be no campaigns anymore.
I realize we can't imagine that. But when you look at the list under the United States, because if you there is a separate attachment to this which lists country by country, a request, this is just under the United States, a request from a local government agency to remove a YouTube video that allegedly defamed a school administrator. Three different court orders from individuals who felt they were defamed. This is in the United States. So you have this kind of request being done in the United States, as well as all over the world, where you have, again, different sensibilities as to what free speech should mean and whether we should limit the use of free speech.
Dan Mintz's third most important federal news story of the week is from Bloomberg. The headline is, Google says government content removal requests rise 26%. All of our stories on the countdown are linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. The second most important stories of the week from Dan Mintz and Ron Sanders when we continue on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Giannotto of the Giannotto Clinic is the expert that Washingtonians have come to rely on for age management and healthy living. And now you can listen to Dr. Giannotto on his weekly show, Wellness DC, Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Join Dr. Giannotto as he takes your calls and shares cutting-edge strategies and techniques for a healthier lifestyle. Tune in Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Wellness DC with Dr. Giannotto on 1500 a.m. and streaming live on federalnewsradio.com.
Does this sound like you? You're not looking to find a job, but you're looking to make a career move. Now there's a career site made just for you, the Washington Professional, PowerJobs.com. PowerJobs.com features leading positions from areas top employers ranging from government contractors to nonprofits and associations. Using PowerJobs.com is easy. Sign up with Facebook, upload your resume using your LinkedIn profile, search by industry, and set up job-specific email alerts. There are hundreds of jobs for Washington's top talent. What are you waiting for? Visit PowerJobs.com today. Finally, a career site made for you, PowerJobs.com.
You don't need two washing machines.
You don't need two cappuccino makers.
Or two snowblowers.
Or two bad knees.
No, you don't need two t-shirts that say, "Kiss me, I'm Irish."
Definitely not.
And your government agency doesn't need two mobility management solutions.
It's unproductive, costly, and annoying.
Kind of like a commercial with two announcers.
Introducing the Citrix Zen Mobile Solution, the mobility management solution that gives your employees the freedom to work from anywhere on any device, and gives you the ability to secure and control devices without having to deploy multiple solutions.
With Citrix Zen Mobile, you can secure and manage your workforce devices, apps, and data from one centralized point.
Your employees get secure email, browsing, and a unified app store.
And you can isolate sensitive apps and data using Citrix Mobile App Containerization technology.
Citrix offers the only end-to-end enterprise mobility management solution you need to provide a completely flexible and secure mobile workplace.
Visit citrix.com/U.S. government to learn more.
That's citrix.com/U.S. government.
You always have to have the last word.
That's right.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
President Barack Obama is calling for changes to the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. In his 2014 budget request, he's asked Congress to open the plan to regional insurance carriers. He also wants to give the Office of Personnel Management more flexibility when it comes to negotiating prescription drug prices, which could save $1.6 billion over 10 years. Members of Congress say they agree that the benefits program is in desperate need of updates, but they'd like more details on the proposal before moving forward.
As a new federal employee, do you realize that you can automatically enroll for up to $100,000 of life insurance on a guaranteed basis with WEPA, a nonprofit association that has been serving the federal community since 1943? No medical exam is required. To be eligible, you must be within 365 days of your original federal hire date. Also, do you know that WEPA's premium rates are significantly less than the federal program? Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
Lawmakers like to talk about federal pay. Now they may be tampering with your pay scale. I'm Emily Kopp. On Monday's Federal Drive, we'll look at how the general schedule could change. And the Energy Department rolls out a tool to help utilities protect power grids from cyber attacks. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose, the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. And we are up to
number 2.
The second most important federal news story of the week on the countdown is chosen by Ron Sanders. Is from federalnewsradio.com. It's my colleague Jack Moore's story. Headline, does GS system need an update? Lawmakers ask GAO to review federal pay scale. And I didn't do what I think is a comprehensive count, Ron, but I think this is, what, the 948th time that somebody suggested we should take another look at the GS system?
Well, I think in one respect it's the ultimate in rhetorical questions.
Yeah.
But this is an encouraging step, because while 947 different people have suggested that we update it, I'm not sure I can remember the last time that you had a Republican and a Democratic member of the House jointly go to GAO and ask the rhetorical question. We all know the answer. The answer is yes. But the fact that you've got a bipartisan letter going to GAO asking this means there's a glimmer of hope that something may actually happen as a result. And I have to tell you, the GS schedule, whether you're talking about its classification system or the way pay is linked to it, that's deadly boring stuff. Only us HR folks get excited about it. But it is a domino. And if you change the general schedule, you pull the thread, you have to modernize the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But it's a good place to start. It's a great thread to pull that will ultimately, I think, potentially force some reforms.
Why do you think that's the case? Why do you think that's the place to start and pull that thread?
Well, that's the foundation. Again, it's subtle. Do we need 15 grades? What are the classification criteria? I'll put you to sleep right here. But the fact is that if you change that, if you modernize that, if you change the way those grades are defined, let's say you broaden them into work bands, different levels of work, you're going to have to revisit how pay is attached to it and how pay is set. And it's going to make it easier because the system today is more than five decades old. It's going to make it easier to actually compare federal work to the rest of the labor market, where today, when you look at those obsolete grades, to say this is what a GS-14 does, and that's equivalent to a full performance accountant in an audit firm or whatever, you just can't do it. So I think the subtlety here is significant.
I wonder, though, Dan, if there's not too much here to try to take on at this particular point in time, because what Ron's talking about would also, it seems to me, require agencies to really do a full inventory of the jobs that they have and the jobs that they need. And I'm not sure there's any kind of appetite to undertake an effort like that right now.
So, you can make this harder than it is if that's the goal. I think it should be possible to make some revision to it without having to, examine every reality. I mean, and by the way, that it seems to me the potential, which would be a step too far, would be to just give greater authority to the executive branch under guidelines that the Congress might set to be able to do revisions on their own. I mean, that would be what I would. It seems to me you shouldn't need a congressional legislation every single time you want to change the HR scale. If you want modernization, boards of directors of corporations don't pass judgment on the pay scale for the corporation.
And the odds of that happening are just about zero,
Right? I think Dan's on the right path here because, again, you've got in law definitions for each of the 15 grades. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the difference between a GS-12 and a GS-13 in law, the principal difference is the insertion of the word very in front of various nouns and verbs.
Mm-hmm.
Not very precise. So if you were to do nothing more than say, we'll repeal those statutory definitions, we'll give OPM the authority to write a regulation around those definitions and go through the whole Administrative Procedures Act, public comment, et cetera, but then issue the definitions as regulation rather than law, then you can update them. Again, it's still tortuous. It's not easy to change anything in government, but it doesn't take an act of Congress. Even that small thread, I think, is worthwhile because, look, we know how broken the system is. And as each year passes, whether pay is frozen or you get a 0.5%, the retirement changes are being debated, et cetera. It's broken, and it's going to need some fixing. I'd start with this.
The hope that I see that you talked about earlier, Ron, is not only are the two leaders of the House Oversight Committee, Congressman Issa and Congressman Cummings, chairman, ranking member, respectively, on this letter. Congressman Blake Farenthold, a Republican who's chair of a subcommittee who's been on this program talking about this very issue, is on this letter, too. And the White House agrees, too. So there's some consensus here, at least, among people on both sides of the aisle that this would be a good idea. What 1 to 10 the odds of something happening in this on this, Ron, in the next 2 years?
All right, I'm an eternal optimist. I'm going to say a 6.
Okay,
it's a little bit better than even odds, and I do think it's in part because if we do nothing, if we maintain the status quo, that means the status quo. It means flat pay lines, means increasingly less competitive salary rates. If we look at where the government's going to be 3 to 5 years in the future of that, that's problematic.
1 to 10 chances of some action on this in the next 2 years, Dave.
Yeah, I'm probably not the world's greatest expert, but I think that the prediction of a 6 or 7 is possible. At least my casual conversation with a couple of people on the Hill is they're looking for issues where there is at least some reasonable amount of bipartisan support to pass something when mm-hmm. they can, because so much of what's going on right now is nothing getting done because there is such broad disagreement. So if, in fact, there is an issue where somebody can make some progress so people can claim, well, I passed this, mm-hmm. I think it may have more legs than you might think.
And so it's more for the political consideration than it is for the practical consideration, but the political consideration means it gets done, so that's good in the long run for the federal workforce, it sounds like.
Well, I realize it's a stretch to say that political considerations play out on the Hill, but
yeah,
yes,
that never happens.
I would agree with the reasons.
But this is the butterfly effect. A small change, I think, can lead to really big changes downstream. So.
Ron Sanders, second most important federal news story of the week from federalnewsradio.com. Jack Moore's story headline, Does GS System Need an Update? Lawmakers ask GAO to review federal pay scale. You can find it and all of our stories on this week's countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And Dan Mintz's second most important story of the week is next on the countdown. We'll be right back.
Facial recognition and lack of privacy is going to be a problem on an ongoing basis. Now, coming up in the future, you're going to see face recognition technology on ATMs, which actually is a pretty good
idea. That's a great idea.
I love that idea. They're also going to have face recognition software on mobile devices, so the device is going to look at your face, and instead of you putting in a code to unlock it, if it doesn't see you, it's not going to unlock.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
How are government executives meeting mission and making a difference? What are government executives doing to make a difference in the face of fiscal and budgetary realities? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these questions and much more with government leaders such as Dr. Francis Collins, Dr. Anthony Fauci, Michael Astru, Kathleen Merrigan, Linda Gibbs, and a host of others for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speak, a conversation on meeting mission and making a difference.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Some of the military's chaplains trying to access the Southern Baptist Convention website this week were surprised. They found it blocked with a message that said it contained hostile content. The problem left military officials trying to explain to leaders of the nation's largest Protestant denomination that it was an unintended software glitch. Defense Department spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Damian Pickard told the Associated Press the problem seemed to be with commercial software it uses to protect its networks. I'm J.J. Green.
We see the hiker. He appears injured.
Every day, the Army and National Guard take to the skies in their newest helicopter, the UH-72A Lakota from EADS North America. Whether for medical evacuation, search and rescue, or emergency response, the Lakota ensures our armed forces complete the mission.
Hiker is secure.
And every Lakota's been delivered on time and on budget.
ETA, 30 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Optimos, a government IT services provider, knows that low-priced, technically exceptional services and solutions provide sustainable advantages to the government and the taxpayer. And Optimos knows they're more than just possible. Exceptional doesn't mean high price. At Optimos, exceptional means defined and achievable return on investment, solution durability, and speed to value. What exceptional things can Optimos do for your agency? Go to optimos.com/viewpoint to learn more. Optimos is proud to be an Oracle Platinum partner.
What secondhand can do. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Nathan has never smoked. He's among the many who never have and never will, but who are still suffering the consequences of tobacco. Secondhand smoke triggered his asthma attacks, infections, and permanent lung damage.
Now I'm so sick, I can't do much of anything I used to love to do. I don't referee youth basketball anymore. I don't run or lift weights. It's too much for my body to take. Instead, I'm taking breathing treatments or oxygen.
The Tips from Former Smokers campaign features real people like Nathan who are suffering as a result of smoking or exposure to secondhand smoke.
Don't let people tell you that working around secondhand smoke is safe.
And if you smoke, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW for free help. Learn more at betobaccofree.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Something that has not been sequestered are the Greater Washington Government Contractor Awards. Now in their 11th year, the awards honor the leadership, innovation, and commitment to excellence of the region's government contracting sector. In today's tough environment, boost your visibility by nominating your company or executive leader for one of these distinguished recognitions presented before an audience of 1,000 business and government leaders. Learn more and apply today at govconawards.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Countdown this week includes the three most important stories of the week to people who work for the government, selected by Ron Sanders of Booz Allen and Dan Mintz of ESEM Consulting. And Dan, your second most important story is from Federal Computer Week. The headline is DOD Issues Directive to Define CIO Role. And I imagine this was very helpful for Terry Takei, but there are implications here for the government more broadly, I would think.
Yeah, so first of all, in terms of DOD, I sort of almost reversed the sentence. I think Terry Takei had a big impact in terms of defining this. DOD has been going over the last 2-3 years a redefinition, wrestling with the definition of the CIO within DOD. It was Senate confirmed. It was an assistant secretary. They abolished that. They moved a lot of things around. So this is a codification. The biggest change in this, compared to the old reality, is a heightened emphasis on cybersecurity and the CIO's role at DOD in cybersecurity. And that's pretty important because you have a relationship between the DOD CIO and Cybercom at DOD, which has a big impact on cybersecurity in the government as a whole. So that was very important in terms of DOD. The broader issue that's going on here, and by the way, for those people listening to the first part of the program, there are no YouTube videos associated with this article, so I have no comments about that. There's a broader issue going on, which Congressman Issa has legislation that he's been working on, and I know Senator Carper in the Senate has been looking at it, in terms of this whole broad issue of what is the role of the CIO. And OMB's been talking about that. And the interesting thing, of course, is this is something that's been talked about and talked about and talked about, perhaps like GSA schedules, since Clinger Cohen and before, mm-hmm. in terms of the responsibility. The interesting thing, by the way, is if this is really important, all the measurements that come out of OMB, none of them deal with the relative authority of CIOs and departments. There is no part of this transparency motion that says the CIO in this department, Department A, has this kind of authority, and they do this kind of review, as opposed to a CIO in a different one. And I believe there's a very healthy debate going on in the Congress right now as to what they should do about that fact.
I see two pieces, Ron, that come out of this story that fit with conversations that you and I have had on the show before. One of the pieces is there's a broader reshaping of what the various C-level jobs at agencies do, and those are starting at different points at every agency, and they're settling at different points at every agency. That's one item. The other item that I see in this story is the progression that the CIO job in particular is taking, transitioning from, and Dan, you experienced this at Transportation as a CIO there, transitioning from a technical position where somebody was in charge of things and toward a thought leadership job where someone is in charge of ideas, concepts, and in some cases, budget. And managing through that change management is as difficult, and finding people who are qualified to do those different jobs is just as difficult as the actual technical things that are involved with executing these things.
I agree with that. I think what we've seen in the C-suite is an evolution from a focus on compliance. And I don't care whether you're a Chico, a CFO, a CIO, Chief Acquisition Officer. In the early days, despite, I think, what were aspirational goals in the legislation, I'll take the Chief Human Capital Officer, Zach, as an example, because I'm intimately familiar with it. It bespoke of a very, very strategic role. When in fact, especially in those early days, the role was more make sure you follow all the rules. I think that's especially important with CIOs. Given the rate of change in technology, you want a strategist, a thought leader and a strategist. Yeah, you got to worry about compliance. You have staff to do that. But getting an organization as complex as DOD out at the leading edge of technology and out ahead of the threat vector, especially around cyber, you can't be bogged down in following all the rules. Again, I'm not saying don't follow all the rules, but I think that's the minimum daily adult requirement. You need people in there who are going to take it to the next level. And I'm encouraged by what is going on in DOD, and I'm especially encouraged with the legislation that Congressman Issa has been pushing.
Yeah, I would recommend to any department, if they want to get a feel for what for implementation purposes, the kinds of language that should go into their CIO definition, looking at this current DOD directive is a real good place to go. And in fact, if I think OMB might want to take a look at what was written up for DOD, understanding it's a big deal, it's a big organization, and think about how much attention or greater attention they should be paying to make sure that something like that exists at each department, and measuring that to make sure that the CIOs are given, even under the current legislation, the authority to do their job. It's a well-written document.
The second most important federal news story of the week, according to Dan Mintz, is titled DOD Issues Directive to Define CIO Role. It's Amber Corin's story in Federal Computer Week, and you can read it linked later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We're up to the most important news stories of the week, selected by Ron Sanders and Dan Mintz on this week's Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Are you looking to go abroad and make a difference? Consider volunteering or studying abroad on a YFU gap year to Thailand, Romania, or Ghana. Earn course credit, live locally, and become a global citizen. YFU offers gap year as well as summer, semester, and year-long programs to 40 countries. Call 1-800-TEENAGE or visit YFUUSA.org to learn more about Youth for Understanding study abroad programs. Change your life. Change the world. Youth for Understanding.
When faced with opportunities and challenges, it's important to have a reliable information technology partner on your side. Make a confident choice with GovConnection. Our extensive experience serving the federal marketplace ensures we can identify and apply the right purchasing vehicles to equip your organization with the right tools to accomplish your mission. The IT marketplace is full of companies who claim to be different. Choose GovConnection and we'll prove it to you. Call GovConnection today at 800-800-0019. That's 800-800-0019. Sponsored by HP.
Furloughs are officially underway at federal agencies. Employees at EPA, Labor, and FAA are among those that have already taken at least one unpaid day off.
How will furloughs affect government employees on a personal level? What are agencies doing to clear furlough-related backlogs? Get the latest on sequestration's impact on federal employees, agencies, and contractors on Federal News Radio's sequestration page. Find it all at federalnewsradio.com/sequestration.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons 3 to 7.
Patrick Fitzgerald's director of the Defense Contract Audit Agency.
We're spending more time making sure that we're putting our resources in the highest risk areas, both in what audits we do and how we do the audits. In FY12 alone, we saved $4.2 billion, and that was the highest net savings that we had in the last decade.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. And the Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week, it's Ron Sanders, Booz Allen Hamilton, and Dan Mintz of ESEM Consulting. And we're at
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week, selected by Dan Mintz, is from FCW. The headline is The Search for More Spectrum. And this is something that is important. I'm curious as to why it's your thought, why your choice for the most important story of the week, Dan.
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One reason is because, and as you know, it's something I'm personally interested in, gotten more involved in, is there's a broad issue of mobility. And in terms of what we keep talking about mobile applications, and we're going to do everything with the smartphones and tablets and things like that. But like everything else, we overlook the fact that there's blocking and tackling that goes along with it. There's a lot of detail underneath it. So we're implementing all of this kind of activity, but at some point in time, we're going to run out of the ability to do it, not because we're not being brilliant enough or not because we're being culturally different enough, but based on the mere fact there isn't enough spectrum available to be able to do it. And I don't think people really recognize that. This, amazingly enough, back in 2008 was a big issue. Department of Transportation touches spectrum a little bit, and it actually was an issue that came up back in 2008, and it's been something that's been wrestling about for quite some time.
There's a perception, I think, and it's obviously not accurate, that you can just make more spectrum. How much do we have left? How much of a resource is still available? Where do we go to reclaim spectrum that's already allocated? All of that.
Well, in fact, there's very little left right now, and that's what's causing all the big conflict. And you have the problem here that in the federal government, as you might not be surprised about, the responsibility for spectrum is spread out all over the government. DOD has pieces of it, and different parts of DOD have pieces of it. The FCC has some regulatory authority over it. NTIA, they mentioned, has authority over it. No one actually even knows, in terms of an exhaustive inventory, as to which parts of the government have which parts of the spectrum. The current administration has said that they want to repurpose a certain amount of the spectrum, but they're going to have to take it away from somebody. And, in the same way, for commercial or civilian use of spectrum, the military, and we certainly can talk forever about all the ways that the military now is using mobility to get situational awareness on the field, they have greater need for spectrum also. So you can't, unless you come up with innovative ways of accessing it, which has not been found yet, it's not there.
What's the implication for the people part of this on this story, Ron? What do you see here?
Well, I'm going to answer the question I want to answer, not the one you asked.
That's why I have you on the show.
I've learned that long ago. Actually, I'll kind of sort of answer it. I think the spectrum issue, especially the way Dan has just framed it, is symptomatic of a much larger problem. And you and I have talked about this. Can the government act like an enterprise, a single sort of corporate entity? It may has lots of specialized pieces and parts, but the idea that the federal government doesn't even know who's got spectrum and it doesn't have an inventory and it's not coordinating all of those, you can make that case for spectrum. You can make it for IT. You can make it for HR. It's not an enterprise. It's a federation at best, maybe even a confederation. And I'll make a shameless plug here. We've been working on a report with the Partnership for Public Service that's looking at the next president's management agenda. What should the Obama administration in its second term be tackling? And of all the things that we've looked at, we've talked to lots of people, it's this notion of how can the federal government start acting like an enterprise? Because if it does, that improves both efficiency and effectiveness. But it's a, you know, right now we live in a vertically structured government. All of the really important problems are horizontal, like spectrum. They cut across agency lines, and we have a difficult time institutionally dealing with that.
Dan, do you think that concept of the government acting more like an enterprise is a reasonable middle ground for the people, for the debate of, well, the government's a government and it can't operate like a business, and the other end of that being the government should operate more like a business? Is the idea of it acting more like an enterprise a reasonable in between, do you think?
The problem still remains how you do it. I mean, we talked about this off the air a little bit, or at least, and the challenge you have is that in private industry, the gating factor is when you do something wrong that really hurts the businesses fail. It's the culling of the herd. You know, the weak zebras get eaten by lions. But in the government, where the people are just as wonderful and often more focused on mission-driven, are wonderful, hardworking people, that culling never occurs. And it's not clear what you can do to cause that to happen. It's, again, one of the fundamental reasons why the government, and I speak as somebody who believes in the free enterprise system, it's not really a business. But I do agree that you have to put in some kind of business processes. I would use transparency, something we talked about, as a mechanism. The more you can make visible in terms of the operation so that everybody can see what's happened, that's the mechanism you use to try and drive behavior in the government.
Dan Mintz's most important federal news story of the week is from FCW. The headline is "The Search for More Spectrum." You can read it and all the stories in the countdown linked up later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Ron Sanders' most important federal news story of the week. We'll wrap up this week's federal news countdown next on In Depth with Francis Rose. Be right back.
The 6th Annual Wine and Food Festival at National Harbor is Saturday and Sunday, May 4th and 5th. Saturday at 3, try the high-end wine and spirits tasting on the beach, then chill out at the Gaylord's Poe's Rooftop Lounge with a sunset wine and cheese tasting. Sunday at 11, join Foodie and the Beast for a live radio broadcast with chefs like Scott Bruneau, Rock Harper, Mike Isabella, and Brian Voltaggio, who all lead demos later that day. For foodie fun and more, it's the 6th Annual Wine and Food Festival at National Harbor, sponsored by Mini USA. Visit wineandfoodnh.com for info.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the departments of defense and state. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
You're dedicated to your agency's mission. And at Federal News Radio, we're dedicated to making that mission easier. We give you access to the people, policy, and programs that affect you every day from the voices that matter most. Hear for yourself. Florida Congressman Jeff Miller.
Secretary Shinseki has made it clear that this type of wasteful expenditure will not stand. I would expect that we will have hearings on the Hill, possibly in the lame duck session. And without question, this is a complete failure of leadership.
OFPP Administrator Joe Jordan.
In terms of suspension and debarment, this is a really important tool that agencies have to fight fraud, waste, and abuse. It's not a retributive punishment, but it's a way to immediately protect taxpayer dollars.
In your car, online, on the go on your mobile device. Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Hi, this is Jim Fleisig. Please join me on Tuesday, April 30th at 12 noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will focus on virtualization and data center consolidation, progress and best practices. The panel includes government leaders from the Department of State and GSA. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum on Tuesday, April 30th at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by Juniper Networks, Unicom Government, and Informatica. At this year's 12th Annual Government Performance Summit, the focus is on the science and art of information and those who bring skilled insights to data. On June 10th and 11th, engage with the emerging leaders in statistical skills, predictive business modeling, and elite performance measurement skills. They will be discussing the new federal career track in performance analysis and the ripple effects for your career and future. For the first time, this is a complimentary event for all government employees, so register today at governmentperformance.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown, with the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Dan Mintz and by Ron Sanders. And Ron, your most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is "Threat of Sequester Furloughs Diminishing or Gone for Some Agencies." And I'm going to just take 1 second here and say, not you specifically, sir, but I told you so, because this is what I talked about the month before and the couple of weeks after sequester started, with media all across the country asking what is going on with sequester and the furloughs and should our hair be on fire and what's going on. And one of the things that I pointed out was Congress can do whatever Congress wants to do at whatever point in time Congress wants to do it. And even this story, updated yesterday, refers to something that's already changed in the 24 hours between this story's come out, Ron, and that's the air traffic controllers.
Right. This is a non-story, but it's a good non-story. You know, the case of the incredible disappearing furloughs.
Mm-hmm.
And there are short-term effects, and we're wrestling with them as we speak. And I'm not going to get into the debate over whether this was hyperbole or reality. We're not going to resolve that debate. I worry about the strategic implications of what we've just been through in two principal respects. One, its impact on the federal government's employment brand. Are we going to be able to compete for the best and brightest after we've just done what we've done?
Mm-hmm.
And again, we may not have had any choice, but the fact of the matter is when we compete, for example, for STEM talent, they're going to think twice. The second is the implication for the government's management systems. Again, all of the rhetoric on all sides of the debate aside, I do think one of the reasons this is the case of the incredible disappearing furlough is the flexibility that Congress gave in the CR and the flexibility that Congress is demonstrating along with OMB in requests for reprogramming. It's underscored the fact that the more flexibility you give agencies to manage their resources, the more they're going to be able to deal with challenges like this. Agencies have faced significant budget cuts, but when you break down the compartments for those funds and let agencies manage, they're going to be able to meet them. And my hope is that the next time I'm on this show, there will be no F word at all. There won't be any furloughs. Mm-hmm. I've got my fingers crossed because my son is a relatively new junior Fed, and at one point he was looking at 22 furlough days for just 12. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the long-term implications, what's it going to do to the brand, and how can we fix the government's management systems so that we don't have to do this again as a stopgap? Again, a shameless plug, we've got reports coming out with the Partnership for Public Service, not just on management reform, but on civil service reform, and that's one of the things we take on. What's the employment brand? What are the implications for the future?
The issue that I keep hearing from people inside government in Ron's field and other parts of the government, Dan, is this just makes us not look like a serious competitor, especially he mentioned STEM, when you're trying to hire cybersecurity professionals and acquisition professionals are the two places that I hear this the most.
Yeah, we talked about trying to act like an enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
If Congress was serious about these issues, the issue is not the sequester. The issue is continuing resolutions and the lack of a coherent budget process. No enterprise, would ever be in a situation where they would go through a whole year without an actual budget. And even when they pass a budget, it would be 6 or 9 months into the 12-month period without a formal budget, just running on a continuing resolution. No one can plan, and that's the problem. It isn't just that there's not enough money or there's too whatever money. It is that no manager can plan out the year when they don't know until 3 months before the end of it what their budget is, if they know then. And if we're serious, if anyone's really serious, they would agree upon something or set up a process so that there was actual budgets that people could operate against. That would go a long way to allowing people to do things.
Now, we do have a scenario this year that we haven't had in many years, and that is the House has passed a budget framework, the Senate has passed a budget framework, and the President's budget framework is out, and we're in the end of April, almost beginning of May. That's unprecedented in the last half decade.
Yeah, isn't that telling?
I'm not saying it's a good thing.
It is a good thing, but it's telling that it's unprecedented.
Yes. And that's it's desirable, and people can say, well, the none of them agree, and we're not close to a resolution. No, that's fair, but we're on that track. Again, 1 to 10 scale, Ron, are you optimistic that we'll get something before September 30th this year, or are we back in CR land here?
I'm an eternal optimist. I'd give it a 6 or 7 because I think the same dynamic that led to that unprecedented phenomenon, we actually have the budgets produced by the institutions that are supposed to produce budgets, that same dynamic I think will get them to the table. And I'm hopeful it'll hammer something out.
This sounds like it's tailor-made for the scenario you talked about earlier, where they just want to get something accomplished to be able to say they accomplished this big task, 1 to 10. What do you think, Dan?
Much closer to 1. So I'll tell you, a year ago, I was at a meeting which included some elected officials, and I was the only one there who said that the sequester was going to stay in place. Everyone else said it was too stupid. It wouldn't do it. And my comment then is my comment now. The problem is getting more than 50% of the people to agree on anything. So I think it's more likely that they will not come to any agreement on any specific thing. Everything will have 40% support.
All right. That's not very optimistic. And you didn't put a 1 to 10 number on it. So I'm gonna appoint a 2 for you. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay.
It's too nice a day. Come on, give him more.
No, he gives me what he gives me. Expect it.
Remember, I'm the guy who believes that in the Stanley Cup coming to Washington.
And keep believing that, because I'm behind you on that one. Dan Mintz of ESEM Consulting, Ron Sanders of Booz Allen. Great to have both of you on the Federal News Countdown this week. The 3 most important federal news stories of the week, selected by each of them, linked up later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We'll archive our Countdown conversation there, too. You can listen to it anytime you want. And hour number 2 of In-Depth with Francis Rose is right around the corner on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.